Bosman. Our final case for argument today is Malik against the Elevator Constructors Union.
Thank you, Your Honors, and good morning to you. We come before you with factual findings, both of discrimination and damages, without a judgment for liability. The reason is that the district court felt constrained by this court's opinion in EEOC versus Pipefitters. Local 2 appears to argue that Pipefitters is effectively, if you will, a get-out-of-jail-free card for unions. We don't believe that Pipefitters is such a broad prescription against union liability. Rather, what Pipefitters is teaching us is to look to who had responsibility and control over the discrimination, who could fix it. That's the party that should be held liable. In Pipefitters, that party was the company and not the union. As Your Honor and Judge Posner were very careful to note, and I'm quoting from Pipefitters now, because so far as the evidence suggests, this union's power, and here we're talking about the Pipefitters union's power, over personnel and work rules is so much more limited than the employer's. Other unions operating under other collective bargaining agreements, and here are other facts, might be delegated additional powers that would alter the analysis in this, the Pipefitters' opinion. We would suggest to Your Honors that today we come before you with that other situation, with those other facts, with different powers. Where Pipefitters involved three unions and one employer, here we have three employers and one union. Local 2 was in control and responsible. We as a society should hold it liable.
Is this a matter of first principles or of statutory interpretation?
I think it's a matter of both. I think that initially when I
don't see how any statutory case can be a matter of first principles. It's not what we as a society want. It's what the statute provides. I mean, what's your best statutory argument?
From the statute clearly provides that we're going to hold the labor organization liable under Section 702D.
703D, right?
703D, excuse me. Thank you, Your Honor.
Right.
And it's responsible for its discriminatory acts. Now, I would
well,
say that...
Well, could I just, to clarify here, I think certainly 703D is a particular part of the statute that addresses training, apprenticeship programs, and the like. And like 703C, it mentions both employers and labor organizations. So the question, in part, is whether the training that you're talking about here, whether there are at least questions of fact as to whether this was under the authority of the labor organization or whether it was under the authority of any particular employer or perhaps this joint created in 2002, which I know is after some of the things that happened here, but whether it's under a joint organization. What's your evidence that it was the union's responsibility to conduct the training that Ms. Malik is seeking?
The district court found quite clearly that it is, in fact, the oath that they're taking. It is the union's responsibility to train its employees. Certainly, you have the jack, but the jack doesn't have control over the mechanics. When Ms. Malik became a union member, she was effectively, and this is part of the 1981 argument, making an agreement with the union that she was going to pay the union dues, and she's going to get the training that the mechanics are going to give us. The district court, and I'm quoting from its factual findings, Ms. Malik reasonably expected that these people, the mechanics, would provide her with the necessary training. In fact, under their oath as a union member, they were required to do so.
So your argument, at least, is that this is essentially the old-fashioned guild, you know, craft union that assumes the responsibility to train up-and-coming members of that trade.
Mm-hmm. I would say that that's very, very much in point. I'd go a step further, and that is that I think that when I first took a look at this, I may have gotten a little bit overexcited as I read Pipe Fitters, and I've looked closer at Pipe Fitters. And Pipe Fitters has some very important reasoning. It says that we're looking to hold responsible the party that does have control. In this situation, these mechanics are acting in the capacity of mechanics, and it's the union that has the ability to discipline these mechanics by charging them. The employer...
Maybe yes, maybe no. Was there, at the trial in the district court, was there any argument, was there any evidence that employers had given directions to the master mechanics that prevented the master mechanics from training the plaintiff?
On the contrary, the evidence that we had, and I recognize that that's not part of the record, we just have the factual findings, but to the contrary, what we had is that the employers send people out to companies, to buildings across the city. It's the mechanic that there is there that's basically running things. Certainly the employer can say which building, can say are you modifying elevators or are you improving elevators, but the reality is that it's a mechanic on site who's handing that micro bit. Which piece are you going to pick up?
I'm asking about the evidence. I'm not asking for your view about reality. Right? Lawyers' view of reality is tenuous at best. What does the evidence show?
That was the testimony, Your Honor. I can't give it to you because...
The testimony of whom?
I believe, I cannot remember the person's name, but the person from the union who was put on the stand explained to us that these are happening at these buildings across the city. I'm not making this up as I go. I'm simply left with the problem that
we have the factual findings. What I'm interested in is, I will ask the same question to Mr. Matthews. Was there any testimony at the trial that any employer had prevented any of the master mechanics from providing training to Malik?
No.
Is there any evidence that describes when a helper is or is not required, because somebody has to pay the additional cost of a helper, I presume?
Well,
the only way you're going to get any training from a mechanic is if the helper is along on the job, right?
The helper is only along on the job if the employer says, we need more than a mechanic, we need to have a helper here.
Okay, and then so that's the only way that the union, you're saying, has no control over whether or not there's a helper going along.
No, the helper either works or doesn't work.
Okay, so and then when the helper does work, then the question I have is, what does a helper do? If a helper is holding the ladder or going and getting stuff, or you say, I need this part or that part, etc., or is a helper hands-on, and where a mechanic saying, now here, see, here's what you do, which I assume takes longer than it would be if just the mechanic went and got it done.
Actually, as the testimony gave us, typically the helper is hands-on with one exception. That's the exception being Sophia Malik.
Exception being what?
Sophia Malik. The helper is hands-on. The helper is getting training. That's what they gave us. The only evidence we have to any extent that anybody didn't was that Sophia Malik didn't get that.
So in other words, you're saying the testimony was that typically when an employer says, I need a mechanic and a helper, the two of them go and the mechanic spends some of the time with hands-on training of the helper, but when Ms. Malik was the helper that went, she was being treated differently.
That's
what
correct,
you're saying
Your Honor.
The testimony showed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And who decides that? You think the union does or the mechanic or...
The mechanic on site does. The mechanic on site has got to decide what's going to happen. What are we going to do to fix this elevator? He's the, or she is the expert on that point. The mechanic on site has got maybe two or three helpers, and which helper is going to help him lift something, which helper is going to hold one end of whatever the gauge is and tell him what the gauge is reading while he's doing whatever it is that he's doing.
Well, helper can't help but getting trained in that category, couldn't it? I mean, you're learning, watching, doing certain
except
things.
If you
Does
have
the
mechanic.
Mechanic have to certify that?
No. The helper has to learn the stuff, except that in this case
well,
we have
to take a subsequent test to see whether or not she's learned it?
There is a subsequent test that comes out. It's a combination of learning on the job and the Jack training classes. And she's not going to be able to pass that test without the learning on the job.
So is she standing there saying there's two helpers, apparently, and one of them is getting all kinds of training and she's being excluded? Is that what we've got here?
That's effectively what's happening on many of these jobs. Not all of them. She complained hundreds of times over a period of 3 years. But many of these jobs, yes, Your Honor, that's exactly what's happening. If I may reserve what I have left for
you. One more question. Are you making a claim under Section 703C as well as under Section 703D?
I think that the initial thought was 703D, but as I read Pipefitters more closely, Pipefitters is really correct in that it can be under 703C or D.
I'm not asking anything about Pipefitters. I'm asking what claim you are making.
I believe we're making both, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Matthews.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm David Matthews for the Elevator Constructors Union Local 2. The training programs that Ms. Malik talks about is the Joint Apprenticeship Committee. That is comprised of labor and management representatives.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't sued. There was no testimony regarding any of the classroom training that's given. So that's a red herring in the 703D because that's not involved in the case. What is involved is the court's finding below that the individual mechanics discriminated against Ms. Malik.
Well, wait a minute. I just want to follow up on that for a minute because in some prior cases, in this court at least, both the union and the apprenticeship committee have been held liable. I'm thinking of Eggleston against Chicago Journeyman Plumbers Union, which is a 1981 decision. And as I see this, there may be an issue down the line as to whether the union has derivative liability for discriminatory actions that its own mechanics took. But that strikes me as somewhat analogous to something like Burlington Industries against Ellerth, where the fact that she was complaining repeatedly may be a relevant fact. I mean, there are all kinds of other things, but I guess to the extent that you're arguing that the union can't be sued because there's this other committee out there some of the time strikes me as not consistent with prior cases.
Those were different factually. The case that we have does not involve the JAC because she's not. If you listen carefully to what he says, he's complaining about the mechanics not training her at the job site.
I understand that.
That's not the Joint Apprenticeship Committee's function.
And that's why she sued the union.
Yeah.
Right. But that leaves
us
with...
There's nothing wrong with the union as a party.
As Judge Wood said, this is very closely parallel to what happens when there's discrimination in terms and conditions of employment. Joe Blow, an employee, engages in discrimination. The victim complains to management. Management does nothing. And we say that management, having been put on notice of the discrimination, is responsible for its own act, that is, the decision to do nothing. And this is a parallel argument. Joe Blow, master mechanic, engages in discrimination in choosing who he will and won't train. A complaint is made to the union, and the union chooses to do nothing.
Right. But who has control over the assignment of work?
That's why I asked whether there was any claim at trial that the master mechanics wanted or preferred to train Malik and were prevented by employers from doing so.
No, there was not. Similarly...
No such evidence.
No,
so there's no evidence. There's no problem here.
There's no evidence that the employer took any steps to remedy the situation, or even if they were aware of it, we don't know. But the point is,
the union's powerless to do anything. That's authorized to say to the master mechanics, when you bring helpers along, part of what you have to do is train them. Don't have them just standing there holding the instruction book or whatever, you know, I don't know what people do, but
We can do that, Your Honor,
is perfectly free under these circumstances to say to the master mechanics, you've refused to train Malik, we're yanking your union card. And, of course, then they can't get employment in many of these positions. But the union
chose not to do that. No, we can't interfere with their employment. We're not allowed to do that. That's illegal. But
what do you mean that's illegal?
We can kick them out of the union, but we can't remove them from the job. We are powerless to remedy this situation.
The employer is the only person who can. Look, trying to argue over a question from the judge rarely does you any good. As I understand it, you can kick them out of the union, and then for any job that has a union security agreement, it's going to be very difficult to get employment.
No, it's illegal to enforce the union security for membership. The Beck case, among others. This is pipe fitters, where Judge Posner said the union could have gone to the...
It doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions for this court.
No, I recognize that.
They're decisions of the court, not of particular judges.
As the court said in pipe fitters, the union could have complained about the racial graffiti, but they had no power to remove it. We can tell our mechanics to train them, the helpers, but it's the employer who says, this is the work I want done, and
but
I want this accomplished.
But that's exactly the question I thought Judge Mannion was getting at, too, which is this trial record, this is a bench trial, after all, this trial record does not seem to indicate that employers are micromanaging what the union mechanics are doing to that level. If there were evidence at the trial that the employers were saying, I've asked for three people, one mechanic and two helpers, and here's what I want each of them to do, that's a different matter. That sounds a lot more like graffiti in the toilets or something. Mm-hmm. But if the employer just says, I want my elevators fixed, you know, send over a competent crew to do that, please, then maybe, you know, at least the district judge certainly seems to think it's the union that's responsible for figuring out how to train these helpers, not the employer.
The district court's finding was predicated on the union oath, which says, I pledge to assist other union members.
Right.
That has nothing to do with training. It's the employer who says,
so
I want this task.
So you're arguing the district court was clearly erroneous to look to the...
I believe he was. But even if you say that he was correct, that leads to his other conclusion that it was the mechanics who were discriminatory, not the union.
Well, Mary, you get to the derivative liability question.
Right, but we have 800 mechanics throughout the Chicagoland
mm-hmm.
area.
Yeah.
Each with a helper. How are we to police something like that?
Well, when somebody complains, that's why the Supreme Court emphasized the requirement of complaining.
But we don't
have... Just imagine if you were representing General Motors. Would you be here saying, we've got 100,000 employees in the United States, it's just too difficult to police them, so we do nothing when they engage in discrimination?
No, Your Honor, but we have no control.
That would be a non-starter.
We have no control over the workplace.
We, meaning the union.
In the training aspect.
The
collective bargaining agreement says the employer reserves the right to assign work of whatever character to the helper. We have no power to tell the employer, you must assign this particular task because this helper needs more training in the construction aspect.
We're back to my question. There's no evidence in this record that there was any interference by the employer with efforts by the union to produce training. So we know from that it was not employers getting in the way of a union training program. So far as this record shows, it's the union not giving a fig about discrimination by its members in running a union training program.
Again, it's the employer who doesn't give a fig about the assignment of work. If indeed there is discrimination.
I don't understand that. Is the employer hiring a mechanic or somebody to fix the elevator, or is the employer have already designated it's going to take a mechanic and two helpers and hire them individually?
Well, generally they work in two-person teams of a mechanic and a helper, depending on the task. And some there's four mechanics in this building and four helpers. They're here for years, but there's other jobs where they'll go out on construction and work various projects and work for 20 different companies.
But after a while, the helper becomes a mechanic, I presume.
Yes, after they take the
inevitably
exam.
Because you're going to learn something, I hope, while you're being a helper and take tests and eventually pass.
Well, that's the theory, as you've addressed. The idea is to work in tandem, and you'll learn by osmosis,
if
not
anything
else. What
happened to Malik? Why was she excluded then?
I don't know. We did not present evidence from the particular mechanics that she complained about.
So we only know, I mean, the court's findings, at least the district court's findings, were very negative, mm-hmm. except in the result, as far as you're concerned.
Yeah. I didn't view him that way, but I suppose
you didn't think the word deplorable was a...
Well, he was talking...
It's a negative word.
We weren't pleased about all of it, no.
The district judge found the mechanics engaged in race and sex discrimination, and the union didn't care.
No, he didn't quite find that. He found that the union didn't help her, but not because of her race or sex. He only accused the mechanics of that. There's no finding that the union said we are going to discriminate.
It is quite possible that the union, as a matter of policy, never helps any of its members. But as I say, if you were representing General Motors and General Motors said, it is our corporate policy, without regard to race, sex, or anything, that we never protect any of our employees from discrimination by other employees, it's looking at punitive damages.
But that's the finding that wasn't made.
But those are the only two options, counsel. Either the union did nothing because of Malik's race and sex, or it did nothing because it never does anything as a matter of policy. I don't see what other options there are.
The option of they didn't think that she had a complaint, that she's supposed to work as a helper, and that's what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Matthews, thank you. Anything further, Mr. Madoff?
Yes, Your Honor, if I may, and very briefly. You know, it's interesting to me that a pro se indigent Safiya Malik used the same simple logic that this court used. That is, sue the party responsible. I think it's something that maybe as lawyers we often miss. And what's happened here is that it is the union who has the control. It has the ability to discipline. It has the ability to charge people under the for violations of their oath. The employer doesn't, and it is in their capacity as mechanics that they're required to do the training. In terms of learning
it's
bias...
It's clear that the employer doesn't. To the extent this is a claim under Section 703D, there's joint liability by the employer and the union. But
except
of course, you don't have to sue everybody who might be liable.
That's exactly right. And Pipefitters teaches us you sue the party that has the control, the responsibility. The union has superior control and responsibility here. It knows about it. It has the oath. Judge Kennelly was very clear that this oath requires the training. That's the fact.
This case, excuse me, started out pro se?
Yes, we were appointed.
You were appointed, yes. Okay. That's what I thought, yeah.
And you know what? I would say that were we not appointed, were we come out as attorneys, we might have very missed that very simple proposition that you sue the party responsible. And I think that that's a statement in Pipefitters that's I think needs to be heard more.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until next week.